As you likely already know, many plants rely on animals known as pollinators in order to reproduce. And everybody likes pollinators, in part because plants are pretty great, but also due to the fact that bees and butterflies have some pretty great PR. However, not all pollinators use the light side of the force. The dark-edged bee fly gets the job done, but has a ruthless way of going about it. But hey, some of us need to get our hands dirty, like the dark-edged bee fly here in life, death, and taxonomy.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and Taxonomy. It's your 30 minutes of interesting animal information. I'm Joe.
And I'm Carlos.
Thank you to Cassie for the creation of our theme song. To hear more of Cassie's music, please search Cassie Michelle on YouTube or Spotify.
And a very special thank you to our patrons. Thank you so much for your support. It's greatly appreciated. Thanks for helping us keep the lights on. If you'd like to donate or just hang out with us, just visit patreon.com/LDTaxonomy or click on donate on our website at LDTaxonomy.com.
And today we're talking about the stolen valor of the insect world. We'll more on that later.
Stolen valor, that's a phrase that seems loaded, but I don't remember what it's all about.
It's like impersonating a soldier. Like claiming to be a soldier when you are not one, or like a veteran. It's generally frowned upon, so yeah. Well, I guess it is a loaded phrase.
Like that Mitch Hedberg joke. Where he's like, hey, I did not lose a leg in Vietnam to be treated like this. It's like, Mitch, you have both your legs. Like I said, I did not lose a leg in Vietnam.
Exactly.
We're not talking about Mitch Hedberg. Yeah. What are we talking about?
I'll tell you with a question. What would you call a destiny sword made of beyond meat? A good name for it?
A destiny.
I think it.
You think?
A sword from the game Destiny.
It would be this?
A dark-edged bee fly.
Made of beef?
Made of Beyond Meat. Beyond Meat is a bee fly.
Is that what it. I want this dark-edged beef lying on my plate, please.
Bee fly. Dark-edged bee. Fly is what we're talking about today.
It's a bee fly. Yeah, it's also called the
it's a bee
greater
fly.
Bee fly, or the large bee fly, or the common bee fly. But we're gonna call it here the this isn't really a name, but it's Hive O'Clock Somewhere and Buzz Cauldron.
You know what the most common bee fly is? That you don't have to, like, cook a burger through. You could treat a burger like a steak. But the reason you can just cook a steak on the outside is because if a fresh cut of beef, the bacteria accumulates on the outside and then you sear it off. But, and then the middle, unlike chicken, is fairly clean and clear and under control. But when you grind beef, all of the bacteria that would have been on the outside is all mixed in together. So treating a burger like a steak is riskier than just, you know, searing a steak.
So you want to avoid that bee fly.
Yeah, a rare burger is not as safe as a rare steak.
Yeah, I'm not eating any of that stuff rare. Medium is the way to go.
I'm a medium guy myself.
I want some flavor, but I don't want a tapeworm. So that seems to really, really straddle that line pretty well. But, you know, I don't want to yoke anybody's yak.
A medium burger, I think, could still have some pink in the middle, but it gets to a temperature still in the middle that's like that'll kill the bacteria as long as it's long enough heated that much long enough.
It's been a long time since.
What is it, 250?
Since I've had 350? A well done burger. I can't be talking about food right now. I'm so hungry. Let's talk about.
But then you get those thin patties. Everything's
good. Smash burgers.
Smash
burgers.
That's
not well done, though. You can have those be medium.
But it's cooked through. It's cooked
through. But it's not like a.
It's not like shoe leather.
Yeah,
no.
It's not like a card. It's not like asphalt. All right. Where does this thing dwell within the kingdom of within the world of animals and science?
Well, it's in the kingdom you know, love, and are in. The kingdom is Animalia. The phylum is Arthropoda. The clade is Pancrusticea.
Crust all over the place.
Pancrusted sea.
That's a good pizza parlor name.
Mm-hmm. The class is Insecta. The order is Diptera. The family is Bombyliidae. The genus is Bombylius. Bombylius. And the species is Bombylius major.
Once again, perfect Hogwarts spell.
Bombylius major sounds like a Hogwarts character.
No, major sounds like a like Bombarda Maxima. Bombylius major.
I guess.
That's where you like instead of it just blowing up what's in front of you, it like shoots a ball of magic that detonates later.
Which is legal. You can blow people's limbs off with bombardus or whatever.
But you can't, kill them.
You can't just kill spell them.
You can't. You can use.
You have to let the bleeding out do that for you.
Also, Reducto just turns things into dust. That's totally fine. Setting people on fire. That also works.
Yeah.
Why is the killing curse so special? Yeah, just break people's necks, I guess, with the force, the stupefy one.
Yeah.
Anyway,
just bring down a wall on them.
Yeah, there's it's illegal to kill people with it's totally illegal to kill people in the wizarding world unless you use this one spell that does it in the most direct way. Bombylius major, since we are in the business of naming things, it's time for my favorite part of the show and the listener's favorite part of the show, nitty-gritty nomenclature. Part of the show where I ask you, Joe, a question, and that is, what is the English translation for the binomial nomenclature, which in this case is Bombylius major? What does that mean? Does it mean A, large bumblebee-like fly, B, great nectar bomb, C, big hairy flower, or D, black-edged giant?
The giant one.
Black-edged giant. He started the Princess Bride, I think. Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
That is incorrect. The answer is large bumblebee-like fly. Bombylius means bumblebee.
The giant one just seemed so non sequitur. It could just work.
I knew that that major meant something major. So I put giant, big, great, and large. All the synonyms there. It's a shame that English doesn't have a more versatile way to turn nouns into adjectives. Like bumblebee-like. We would say like bumblebee. You know, like just put it a little like another Y there, and it
bumblebee-ish.
Yeah, and that none of that standard, and it doesn't work all that well. But other languages do just slap on a suffix, and suddenly you're now
ish works. I mean, in French, it's just esque, right? But it's not standard, like you said.
Right. Yeah.
It's common, but it's not standard,
and it sounds weird. We need something that sounds a little bit more sophisticated than bumblebee-ish.
And then what if it's a fish? A fishish?
Fishish, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that wouldn't work.
Yeah, things get hinky. Absolutely.
Then it's fishy.
Well, then, yeah, then you can use the E. We have a lot of opportunities to use E, but not if it's bumblebee. Anyway.
What if you want to say it's like a bumble? It's bumblebee. It's bumbly.
Boy, there's the, yeah. That would be bumble-e.
Bumblish.
This is timely because Bumblebee is my son's favorite Transformer, and so we have 6 or 7 different versions of Bumblebee. Whenever he wants to play with him, he gets to be Bumblebee. I have to be Optimus Prime, which means I have to come up with the stuff we have to do in the game. So it's like I sit there and I'm like, okay, I want you to be the boss while we're playing the game, so I can just kind of go along with what you're doing, and I can kind of turn my creative brain off for a second. But it's like, no, you're the boss. You're Optimus Prime. So tell us what we're going to do. Oh, okay. Let's go find some Decepticons.
We'll just have Optimus Prime be, you know.
I feel like I let him down a lot is what I'm trying to say. He's like, oh, my dad
wants
the
input from his men.
Well,
we're gonna go clean your room. No.
Yep, and when we're the Decepticons, guess what his favorite one is? It's not Megatron, it's Starscream. So guess who has to be Megatron?
Would you like to hear what it looks like?
Yeah, I sure would.
Well, it's a bee fly, so it's got a dense coat of golden brown hairs that give it a fuzzy, bee-like appearance. It has long, spindly black legs, a rigid, needle-like proboscis. That's often as long as its body. It's got a really long proboscis. It looks like a Pokemon in that regard. It looks like a fuzzy little bumblebee.
With some cartoonishly large features.
With cartoonishly large features. It's got dark wings with a distinctive smoky brown patch near the front edge. And it looks like a bumblebee. It is the stolen valor of the bee kingdom.
It's wearing the enemy's uniform. It is in violation of the Geneva Convention.
But it does have a nasty little fly face. It doesn't have a bee's face. It has a fly's face.
That's how you could. It's the shibboleth. It's the shibboleth of bee flies. Yeah. Oh, you have a nasty little fly's face, huh? Yeah. Now we know who's a true Scotsman here.
But that brings us to the creature size, and it mentions welcome to the Beloved Measure Up segment. The official listener's favorite. It's the official listener's part of the show. It's part of the show that's introduced by you when you send an audio of yourself saying singer, chittering the words measure up into ldtaxonomy.com. But what is it? It's the part of the show when we present animal size and dimensions in relatable terms through a quiz that's fun for the whole family. We don't have a new measure up intro this week. We do have a response. Remember, she sent us a picture of her beta fish, and she says, and we were guessing Isolde or Isolde. She says, and we asked for a language of origin. She says, Isolde.
Isolde.
Isolde. And it's Welsh in origin. And it's based, the name comes from a character in Arthurian myth, she says a tragic romantic story with Tristan, one of King Arthur's knights. I've never heard of Tristan.
Isolde, I have heard of this. I don't know where I've heard of it, but that's like one of the major, that's like a Romeo and Juliet level tragic love story.
Okay.
That is referenced.
But Eva also... also said that the leopard seal, she suggested leopard seal. She said that was an awesome episode. I sent it to my whole family. Thank you for covering the leopard seals. So thank you for suggesting it and sending it to other people.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's great. That's the only, we don't do any marketing. That's the only way we grow, really.
That's
and you know, organic search.
And occasionally being picked up by some like weird publication and getting a bunch of visibility that way, but yeah, we don't do any of the marketing ourselves. It's all by word of mouth.
Not as a rule, just as a matter of convenience.
I don't like social media. I don't want to have to use it.
Yeah, exactly. Same. Well, without further ado, the listeners part of the show.
What did you just do to me?
It's a buzzing and a booing sound. And that came from the same creature?
I feel like you just put a jinx on me. I've been hexed. It sounded like a, you listen from? To this, you'll die in 7 days kind of thing.
No. You'll be vexed by that sound, maybe in your ears.
I have no idea. There's some Casper the Friendly Ghost booing going on there, and then...
Yes.
Am I right? Is Casper the Friendly Ghost?
No, but you're right that's what that...
Oh, it's a ghost.
You're on the right track with that.
It's a bee ghost.
Close.
Fly ghost.
You're so close to the creature's... To this character's name.
Ghost fly.
Correct. Ghost flies from Adventure Time.
Oh. Oh. I have not seen enough of Adventure Time. I haven't seen that guy.
But I have not seen the episode, but just from the like scrubbing through this video to find a good sound for it. It seems like they kill a fly and then they're haunted by the ghost of the fly. And how funny, what an interesting concept that the bugs you kill, you could be haunted by their ghosts.
That is a perfect Adventure Time premise. I gotta watch more of that show.
Indeed, it is.
I've liked every episode I've seen, and I just have never got into it when it was on TV and stuff. But maybe I'd get into it now. Maybe I'd get more out of it as an adult.
Let's talk about their length. They're 6.3 to 12 millimeters, or 0.4 inches. The walls, the royal walls of
the royal walls.
Ceuta are a historic line of fortifications surrounding the Spanish city of Ceuta in North Africa. Originally built in 962 AD and expanded through the 18th century, the walls remain largely intact today with only a few outer defenses lost. Do you know where Ceuta is?
You said it was in North Africa.
It was just in the news.
So is it in Morocco?
Yeah. It's just across the Strait of Gibraltar from Spain. Yeah,
so that would be Morocco.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that there was like a section of Spain that was in Morocco.
Did you know that Gibraltar is not Spain's? Apparently. It's the UK's, I believe.
Oh my gosh. Before we started this podcast, we were looking at maps. I'm looking at maps again. Gibraltar is also, I guess, a place near in Detroit. So
not that one.
We're going back to the episode.
Not that one.
True or false? 1,250 bee flies go into the royal walls of Ceuta. The length or the height? No, the height. Okay. The tallest. I think the generally tallest height. There are different heights because it's like it's really long wall, but. Tallest one.
I'm not even going to try to do math on this one because I'm just going to say true. Watch, I'll do the math and it's like Oh, you thought the walls were going to be 6 feet tall or something like that?
It's Hadrian's Wall.
Yeah, I guess it could be
chest high wall.
I guess that you wouldn't really need to storm it then if it was Hadrian's Wall. You could just kind of get your torso over it and you're good. Yeah, we'll go with true.
The correct answer is true. The walls are 10 to 15 meters or 33 to 49 feet high.
Yep. Those are some good walls.
You know they were doing meters when they built it. Because it would be insane to build a 49-foot wall.
Stop right here. No, not a foot further.
But 15
if
meters?
If you put a crenellation that makes this 50 feet, I'll kill you. This is going to be a 49-foot wall, or my name isn't whatever, whoever made this place.
Inigo Montoya. But it's funny to think about when you look at the like metrics of the height of something or the length of something, you know what they were measuring, the measurement system they were using based on the round number. Although 10 to 15 meters, 33 to 49. So 33 to 49, I guess that's like if there's a range, if there's like a 36-foot high section, there are no rules and we are lost.
I am usually on board with metric stuff, but the metric system lengthwise really needs something between a centimeter and a meter. I mean, it has a decameter, but nobody uses that.
Yeah, that's why a nice blend of the two is good. You got a nice a foot, you got a yard, you got a meter.
But a yard and a meter are like right there next to each other. When in fact it's so close that I just think of
yeah, you don't need a yard and a meter.
Right. So foot and yard.
Unless you want to do the 100. There's a 100-yard dash. There's, man, what the heck? Why did we do the 100-yard dash in elementary school? And then in high school, it was meters again.
I wasn't keeping track of the measurement. I just knew I had to run. Wasn't a fan of that, regardless of whether it was yards or meters.
Let's talk about their wingspan. It's 8.4 to 14 meters or 0.5 inches. According to the MLB, no major league ballparks are exactly alike, but certain aspects of the field of play must be uniform across baseball. True or false? The distance from home to first base is exactly 2,160 B-flies long. Wingspan wise,
2,160, and it's half an inch, so that means it's 1,080 inches, which means it's 90 feet exactly. I'll take it. True, because it came out to such a beautiful round number.
The correct answer is true. The distance to each base is 90 feet. The distance from home plate to the back wall to get a home run. Different across all ballparks, all major league
that
ballparks.
That seems like that shouldn't be the case.
But 90 feet. You have to run 90 feet. If it's inside the park, you need to run at least 90 feet to be safe.
That seems insane.
I like it.
To get a home
but did
run
you know that
different.
Soccer pitches are the same thing? Soccer pitches are different. Sizes?
A soccer field?
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense either.
Football is
pretty standardized.
Apparently, strangely standardized.
Basketball?
Yeah, basketball as well.
No, I mean, can you imagine a basketball where it's like at in this stadium, the hoops are 20 feet above the ground. You're gonna have to huck that thing as far as you can to make to get a basket, and no one's dunking on it. But that's just how it works here in Chicago.
Right. That would be fun.
No, wouldn't be.
It would make it more interesting.
It's like nobody's dunking this game because we're in Chicago.
Well, I like it. I like it because it gives the ballpark character. The ballpark is a character of play. You know, it's a factor.
It's a factor that play that can play for or against a certain team. Like one team might have like a bunch of sluggers on it, and so if it has if hitting it over the fence is easier in a certain field, then that takes away that team's advantage.
If one team has a bunch of sluggers on it and they're really good at hitting the ball, they deserve to win.
Well, then that means the other team that isn't as good at hitting the ball as far can also get home runs because the fence is closer. It evens the playing field where previously they would have had an advantage at a bigger field.
So that you're saying it evens the playing field.
It evens the playing field against the talent and skill of the players. If one team is better than the other at hitting the ball far, then the baseball field takes away that advantage of theirs, which is the whole reason they're playing the game, is to see which team is better, not which team is better on this field.
Well, they both have to play at least three games on that field. So it's like the fact that it's three games takes away some of the fluke of it all. But, I mean, it is standardized. You both have to bat. You both have to field.
But just like imagine, okay, you have, I know like the names of four baseball players in history. So I'm going to use one of them, Babe Ruth. He obviously was good at hitting home runs, regardless of how far away the fence was. If you bring that fence to 15 feet away from me, I can hit home runs too. So like, hooray! We both hit home runs. I'm as good as Babe Ruth. Like,
I think you and I both, if the fence was 90 feet away, would not hit a single pitched by a major league baseball.
Okay, well, yeah.
Pitcher.
There's the problem of actually hitting the ball in the first place. But if I connected, I would get a
Which is probably like it's 90% of the game of baseball is between the pitcher and the batter. The rest of the field is there as backup for the pitcher.
Yeah. We've talked about baseball for too long. We've lost everybody.
They have eclectic tastes. The LDT army. But would you like to hear some fast facts before we get into the major facts? It is found through the dark-edged bee fly, that is found throughout much of Europe, North Africa, and Western and Central Asia. It's everywhere, except for everywhere in the Old World. It enjoys sunny habitats like woodland edges, meadows, gardens, heathlands, and parks. Whenever I think about heathlands, just a land full of heath bars. Have you had Publix Heath cookies?
Yes. So delicious.
So good.
Oh, man. We started out talking about dark-edged beef, and now we're talking about heath. Heath and beef. I'm so hungry.
The greater bee fly is an active daytime pollinator that thrives in warm, sunny weather. It is a generalist pollinator, visiting a wide variety of flowers and sometimes providing a majority of pollination within a local habitat. The greater bee fly,
The greater bee fly is another name for it.
Greater bee fly, yeah. is an important early season pollinator. A long, rigid proboscis up to 7.5 millimeters. And its length was between 6.3 and 12 millimeters. It's quite a long proboscis, which allows it to drink nectar while hovering, often gripping flowers only with its front legs.
It has a straw that reaches so across the room and drinks your milkshake.
Exactly. It drinks nectar like a hummingbird, remaining in flight. Guess what it enjoys? Primroses, lungworts, bluebells, violets, various spring wildflowers. All kinds of flowers. Primrose, lungwort, bluebells, violets could easily be butterflies. We've talked about that.
And brands of ice cream.
Bluebells is. A primrose sounds like a really high-end
ice primrose cream. Ice cream, oh yeah. That stuff, that's like Halo Top Plus, where they managed to make it only 50 calories per pint, but still tastes good.
Yes.
And it costs $60.
Yeah, for a pint. Unlike butterflies, it often feeds while hovering instead of landing, I said. Certain plants, such as the lungwort, rely almost exclusively on pollination from this bug, while others have evolved flower shapes and colors specifically suited to the bee fly. To attract the bee fly. It at long distances, it locates flowers primarily by sight, preferring blue and violet blooms, while scent becomes more important at close range. So when they get closer up, the discerning palate, the nose knows, I guess. researchers have also discovered that the fly sometimes rotates around its ventricle axis during flight, we don't really know why. It may be related to courtship. They might be spinning to attract a mate. Spinning like a ballerina.
Spin it to win it.
At night, it shelters in trees, and during the day, it's quick to flee from passing shadows. So it's a scared little bug. Shadows usually don't mean anything good for a bee or a fly. It's either a cloud or a predator. Either way, you need to get indoors or under something. But that's all I got. Do you have any big facts?
I do. This major fact is called Two Bees in a Pod. So as helpful and important of pollinators, as you just mentioned that they are, they have a dark side to them. Adult dark-edged bee flies are harmless to humans and other and the flowers and everything, but when they are young, they have a more entrepreneurial approach to obtaining their food. So females, when they have, after they've mated and they have eggs that are fertilized and ready to go, they will find the nests of solitary bees like the Andrena bee or even certain wasps. Specifically, it's better if they're solitary, not like an entire hive. But they'll find these nests. They will hover outside of these nests. And then they will flick their eggs toward the nest, usually like a burrowing bee or like a wasp's, like those little mud hovels they make. She will flick her eggs inside without actually going inside herself. She'll also coat the eggs in grains of dust or sand to help them camouflage so that they just kind of blend in with the rest of the dirt inside of the burrow. and apparently also weights them to make it easier for them to toss accurately. So once the egg gets in there, it hatches, ideally before the young of the little beelings. And the tiny larva will crawl deeper into the bee's tunnel and look for the developing bee larva. And the the fly larva will feed externally on the outside of the bee larva and then just eat the whole thing. So it's a parasite that just straight up kills its host. And additionally, bees tend to collect pollen and nectar and store it around the bee larva as preparation for the bee larva hatching. And the fly just eats that too. So just an absolute Viking of a of an insect. And this is called parasitoidism, which is not like usual parasitism, where the parasite needs the host to stay alive in order to continue taking from it. This is one where the nest is parasitized, but the host is killed. And then so it gets the food it needs and then develops into its next instar, and that's the life cycle of this fly. It depends on these bee nests. And the bee fly has adapted to just not gather food or build a nest on its own. It uses the existing bee nests to do this, obviously saving a bunch of time and energy on the fly's part. And like I said, it targets solitary species, because if it targeted an entire hive of bees or nest of wasps, then obviously it would be much harder to infiltrate and it would be well defended. But yeah, that's the cost of having this like very specialized pollinator. Not a cost to us, of course. A cost is solitary bees and wasps. And you know what? If you're going to, whatever any other insect does to wasps, you know, I applaud them. Do it. Get them. Be mean to wasps. They're horrible.
It's so sad, though, that the bees are often collateral.
Yeah, I mean,
we bees.
Like bees. I hate wasps. They're everywhere here. And they build nests so quickly, and they do nothing for the ecosystem that we have going on here. They're like mosquitoes. We would be better off without them.
They eat other bugs, right? So they're in the ecosystem.
They're in the ecosystem.
They're just not making honey.
They're not
A spider does its job, and the spider does its, like, generally, you know, keeps its territory. Doesn't sting your
family. It's not trying to get me, where yellow jackets are trying to get you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's unacceptable.
Spiders don't want anything to do with
you. Yeah, the spiders can stick around as long as they're not in the way.
I've been spider pilled recently. I'll let a spider do its thing if I see it in my house, depending on the kind.
In my house is not acceptable. In my garage is fine. Out on the outside of my house is fine. Inside the house, no. It does not get to. It's not paying rent. It does not get to enjoy the heated square footage of my house.
I like a daddy long legs in the corner. When it's vacuum time, it's vacuum time. Like, I'm not, you know, you're gonna have to deal with that.
Around a daddy long legs.
Right, exactly.
Which is not a spider. So yeah, you don't even have to worry about it.
Well, no. We're not talking about a harvest man. I'm talking about, I don't even know what it is. It's not the small house spiders that have long legs are not true harvest men.
The little like red puff balls.
So they may very well be, yeah, arachnids. But also the little jumping spiders. I'm not going to crush them. They're thinking.
They're measuring their jumps. They're doing math.
They almost seem to have more thoughts than a lizard
does.
They're
doing math.
You know?
You don't want to kill someone while they're doing math. That's bad luck.
Yeah. That's bad luck.
It's a 7 times something years bad luck. I don't know. I don't.
You're beating up a nerd at that point. You're a bully. You're a bully at that point.
You're an 80s bully.
You kill a jumping spider.
But yeah, that's all I've got on the dark-edged bee fly.
That's all I got.
All right. That was the dark-edged bee fly for you out there in Podcastia. Munch on some tasty pollen. Attach yourself to some choice bees. And save the planet while destroying the bees, I guess, like the dark-edged bee fly here in Life, Death, and Taxonomy.
Hey Taxonomy Titans, I just want to remind you that we have a Patreon that you can find by going to ldtaxonomy.com/donate. All of our episodes are uploaded there. Sign up for free to engage with us, leave episode suggestions, or chat with other animal enthusiasts. If you find it in your heart to donate, it will help us cover some costs and continue to make the show. Plus, we'll thank you every week. Most importantly, thank you all for listening.
My favorite in the world podcast.
I don't think you can do both of those things.
The Dark Edge Bee Fly is currently doing those things.